Issues, Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues, Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
یا باید فشار بیاره دومش از بیخ کنده بشه تا بتوانه خودش خلاص کنه، یا باید همجور بمانه در لجن فرو رفتن.
بعضی خیال میکنن امام در دوران غیبت چون کاری به کار عالم نداشت، همه هستی به هم میریخت. امام مدیریت میکنه جهان.
The voices of both Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme leader in Iran, and of many Shiites worldwide, and of President Ahmadinejad of Iran. He also is a Shiite. These two are probably the most famous Shiite voices in the world. Who are the Shiites? You say, I know what a Muslim is, but I thought a Muslim was a Muslim was a Muslim. Well, there are differences, some really significant differences within Islam. We're going to talk about that sect of Islam called Shiite or Shiism. Wayne Mahal joins us here for the first half hour of Issues, Etc., live this Wednesday afternoon, July the 22nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. In the second half hour of the program, Dr. Daniel Skillman will join us, Pastor Daniel Skillman. We're going to talk about the relationship between doctrine and practice. Is what you teach reflected in and expressed in what you practice in church? I'm talking about worship practices and the like. And does the road go the other way too? That is, how you worship, what the practices you adopt in the church, do they eventually affect what you believe and teach as well? We'll answer that question here in about a half hour. In the second hour of the program, Dr. Peter Scare is going to join us. The church remembers on this day Mary Magdalene. So much nonsense about Mary Magdalene floating around out there in fiction. What is the truth from the scriptures about this, well, I think we can say disciple and companion of our Lord Jesus Christ? And then Dr. Gene Twenge will join us. We're going to talk about Christian narcissism, co-author of a new book, The Narcissism Epidemic, Living in an Age of Enlightenment. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-6943. Email us here in the studio as well. We get your questions and comments in real time. Talkback at issuesetc.org, talkback at issuesetc.org. Wayne Mahal is associate editor of the Christian Research Journal, co-author of a cover story in a recent Christian Research Journal titled The Other Islam, Who Are the Shia? Wayne, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd. It's great to be back.
I thought a Muslim was a Muslim was a Muslim. How significant are the differences here? How many brands of Islam are we talking about?
Yes, that's a common question. I teach world religions in both the secular and sacred environment, and that's one of the first questions my students ask when the class begins at the beginning of the semester. I thought all Muslims were Muslims, but that's not the case, actually. There are two main sects in Islam, the Sunni and the Shiite. Sunni Islam is the largest denomination, making up about 90% of the world's population of Muslims, roughly 940 million adherents. The other sect, the Shiite sect, makes up about 120 million adherents, and that would make up about 10% of the world's Muslim population.
Why is it that the Shia are both politically and in some cases, or I guess depending on how you look at it, religiously, what should we say, more significant, more troublesome?
I'm sorry, could you ask that question again? I didn't understand it.
Well, why is it that the Shia seem to be kind of more in the forefront of people's consciousness?
Oh, yes, certainly. Well, first of all, we have to look at demographics. If you look at this 10%, this 120 million Shia that make up the Shiite sect in across the world, you turn to Iran and you find the majority of that 120 million. For example, the population of Iran is roughly about 67 million, and that's made up of pretty much all Shiite Muslims. And so what you have is a very hotbed area of the world where a lot of political strife and restructuring is taking place. and therefore the Shiite sect is cast into the light in the world light, world media light, because of that location and the demographics.
So how would you describe the basic historical differences between the Shia and the other sect, the Sunni, the majority?
Sure. The Sunnis have their historical roots in the majority group, who followed a man named Abu Bakr, who was a really effective leader and Muhammad's successor. Instead of his cousin and son-in-law, Ali, the Shiites followed Ali. The Sunnis followed Abu Bakr. The Sunnis are named Sunnis because they believe themselves to follow what's called the Sunnah, or the custom of the Prophet Muhammad, whereas the Shiites are those Muslims who follow Ali, who is the closest relative of Muhammad, as Muhammad's successor.
Then this is something that, what, the differences go back to virtually the inception of Islam?
Yes, right back to the beginning, and to discrepancies in who should we follow, who has the true word. Of course, both agree that the Quran was the inspired word, the word given to the Prophet Muhammad for the followers of Allah. But they disagreed on who would guard that word, who'd be the guardians of not only the word but the tradition as well, and that's where they split.
Where do they differ, the Sunni and the Shia, on, I guess, authority issues of the Quran, the Hadith, the various other sacred traditions in Islam?
Okay, well, the Shias put the identity of their sect in the hands of the imams, or their spiritual leaders. The imams to the Shiite Muslim, the imam is an infallible manifestation of God, and he's also a perfect interpreter of the Quran. He would be compared perhaps to the Pope of the Catholic religion, but even a little bit more deified, if you can understand that, or the listeners can. Whereas the identity of the sect of the Sunni Islam is put into the human leaders, who are seen as the successors or guardians of the Quranic material, the scholars per se.
So they call him the supreme leader. We've seen him in the news lately, especially after the elections, the presidential elections in Iran, when Ayatollah Khamenei stands and addresses the Shiite population. How do they regard his utterances?
Well, that's a great question, and just as I said, they regard those utterances as infallible. They regard him as being a manifestation, even a human manifestation, a spiritual partner of the imamic tradition, and they put everything, even their disagreements of political strife or of any societal problems they might have, they put those aside in order to follow his lead. Now, when I say that, though, I say that mainly in regards to the traditional Shiite Muslim. When you have a new generation of young Muslims coming up who aren't Orthodox and are maybe listening to more of a political tradition that comes from the West, they might be more inclined to rebel against that religious tradition and to manifest their belief system in more of a secular tradition. There's a struggle.
I guess you talked about the kind of the population center for Shia being Iran. In the West, is there any way for us to know in the West whether or not most of the Muslims in the West are either Sunni or Shia?
Yes, we have numbers on that too. It's very, very small population of Shia adherents in the West. In the United States, you know, roughly our population is around 300 million. 6% of that population is Muslim, and the Shia Muslim population in the United States is roughly around 20% of that 6%. So, roughly, a little bit over a million. So there is a respectable group of Shiites in the United States, and that group is growing. And that's part of the thrust of the article, is to make that known to the reader so that we can be prepared to offer a bridge for evangelism.
Of the groups that are associated with global terrorism, do they tend to be Shiite?
Yes and no. When you say global terrorism, I'm assuming that we're mainly speaking of some of the major events that we have, you know, for historical reference, such as 9/11, such as the subway bombing in London, such as the train bombing in Madrid, those sorts of events of global terrorism that occurred. Those mainly were carried out by Sunni radical Islamic adherents. But when we move to the specific demographic locations, for example, in Iran, a lot of the terrorism, which I'm sure we would consider global terrorism as well, that takes place there is Sunni Shiite violence, Shiite on Shiite violence. For example, just a few months ago, a Shiite woman strapped with explosives walked into a Shiite picnic during one of the holy holidays of the Shiite belief system, and she basically was a martyr for her faith and ended up killing dozens of men, women, and children because she disagreed with some of the Shiites, that particular sect of Shiites' perspective on certain issues.
Well, when we come back from this break, we're going to continue our conversation with Wayne Mayhall about the sect of Islam called Shiism. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-MYIE or talkback at issuesetc.org. Wayne Mayhall is associate editor of the Christian Research Journal. On the cover of a recent edition, he has an article titled "The Other Islam: Who Are the Shia?" We'll post a link to the Christian Research Journal at our website, issuesetc.org. Go to the on-demand page, issuesetc.org. When we come back, the particular doctrines and practices of the sect of Islam called Shia. What do they believe different from the majority of Muslims, and what do they practice different from the majority of Muslims? 1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuesetc.org. After 10 more minutes with Wayne Mayhall on Shiite Islam, Pastor Daniel Skillman will join us. We'll be talking to him about the relationship between doctrine and practice. A lot has changed in terms of practice. Does that mean in the church that the doctrines have somehow been changed too? Stay tuned. Concordia Publishing House has a new devotional for men titled "Blessed is the Man, A Man's Journey Through the Psalms." It's a great resource for individual and group Bible study. Browse before you buy at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or purchase "Blessed is the Man" by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. "Blessed is the Man, A Man's Journey Through the Psalms," the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384. 8384.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Noted author and history professor Dr. Paul Meyer on the uniqueness of Issues Etc.
I'm delighted not only to listen to Issues Etc., but also to have the privilege of being on the program from time to time. Issues is never afraid to take a stand on the thorny, vexing issues that clutter our daily horizons. And it does so in the name of a solidly based Christianity that doesn't flirt with fads or fantasies, whereas some Christian programs sidestep ethical and doctrinal questions in our day. Issues takes them head-on in a fearless, responsible, thoughtful manner. Both head and heart are involved when Issues applies Holy Scripture.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. This coming Friday, we're going to be doing a live remote, our first live remote. We've done many live remotes in the previous incarnation of Issues, Etc. This Friday, the first after our return to the air more than a year ago. And it's altogether appropriate that our first live remote would be at the National Conference of Lutherans for Life. After all, we are all about defending life from beginning to end here at Issues, Etc. So we're happy that Lutherans for Life has welcomed us there for our first live remote Friday, this coming Friday, from 3 to 5 at the Westport Doubletree Inn in St. Louis for the National Lutherans for Life Conference. We'll be interviewing the brother of Terry Schindler Schiavo and many other guests. Tune in live, or if you are in the area and can come out to watch the live remote broadcast of Issues, Etc. at the Westport Doubletree Inn in St. Louis from 3 to 5 Friday afternoon. Find more information at lutheransforlife.org, lutheransforlife.org. Wayne Mayhall is our guest. We're talking about the sect of Islam called Shiism. Let's talk about their peculiar beliefs. How would you begin?
Shiites agree with Sunnis in most areas of Islamic theology, including the fact that Muhammad is the final prophet. They agree with the Quran and its writings and that they're inspired by Allah, and they see the Quran as God's final book, replacing everything that came before it. And they also find God's, or Allah's rule, God as they would say, as perfect, and as all other religions eventually being encompassed into their faith. Shiites differ, though, regarding the five pillars, which are the five pillars of faith that every Muslim believer must adhere to as an adherent of the faith. A Shiite mosque, for example, you will see pictures of holy places where the imams are buried, and a lot of the Shiites, most of the Shiites, are required to make pilgrimages to these burial sites of the imams who have come before the now 12th imam. And instead of making a pilgrimage to Mecca, as the Sunni Muslim would have to do, they see these pilgrimages to the imams as their obligation. Also, they may pray two times a day facing toward Mecca, as opposed to three times a day, as the Sunni would pray. And there are other more controversial doctrines, too, such as the doctrine of Mucha, which is basically the opportunity for the male Shiite to be married to a woman other than his wife for an hour or for a longer period, simply with permission from one of his superiors. This doctrine has been likened to something similar to prostitution by those who are against it, even within the Shiite sect itself.
What is this this notion that they can, if they feel as though their property or maybe even their life is in jeopardy, that they can, in essence, deny being Shiite and present themselves as Sunni?
Yes, exactly. And that's a very popular practice, especially in areas where this would occur, where they would find themselves in a position of being endangered or their family might be endangered. The doctrine is called taqiyya, and taqiyya is basically defined as dissimulation, meaning that when a Shiite is asked by a Sunni if he is a Shiite, and if his life, as you said, property or family is threatened, he can legally say that he is a Sunni. In Iraq, for example, where there have always been Shiite and Sunni conflicts, this has been a very valuable resource for Shiites for protection.
The perhaps the most famous Shiite belief of late is in the final imam, or the advent of the final imam. What is believed here, if not by all, then at least by some Shiite Muslims?
Right. Well, the final imam is considered to be in a state of what's called occultation. He was already, his name, by the way, is Al-Mahdi. Al-Mahdi was already on earth and is currently what's called a hidden imam, who works through the different officials of the Shiite faith to interpret the Quran. And at a time in the future when Al-Mahdi, this 12th imam who's in occultation, decides that it's time to wrap things up, for lack of a better way to put it, he will return and will institute, then, sort of like Christ's return for the Shiite, he will institute the reign of Islam on earth.
So when you talk to or talk about people like the president, Iran, Ahmadinejad, and he speaks about this final imam already controlling everything, really, do they believe that this is an actual human being in control of world events behind the scenes?
If you asked him that, he personally, if we're sitting in your living room with you right now, which would be a scary thing, but if he was, he'd probably be very friendly, and his response to that would be, as it has been in the public media, is no. At this time, he would refer to it as a sort of spiritual guidance that comes from this leader who we have not yet seen in the flesh. That sort of thing.
Then, do they believe what is this final imam going to do when he manifests himself?
And that is a good question that even Shiite scholars have very differing opinions on. Some say he will appear at the same time that Christ does, and that he and Christ will work together to institute a one world, one faith belief system, political, spiritual system that will clear up all the evil and take care of business, pretty much, in short. Other scholars believe that when Al-Mahdi, the final imam, returns to earth out of his state of occultation, that it will be an eschatological nightmare for those who do not believe in him. He will exhibit wrath and justice and will institute a Shiite-only religious social system.
How do Sunnis regard Shiites?
That question, too, and I hate to keep, backing up, but questions like that do kind of bring multiple answers, depending on who you're talking to. Most Orthodox Sunnis see Shiites as the proverbial thorn in their side because they won't let go of their tradition, and it's kind of ironic, of course, the Sunni won't let go of his tradition either. They believe that they'll always have this problem of the Shiite with them. It'll always be manifested in forms of violence and misunderstanding, and no matter how many democracies, such i.e. the United States, England, etc., get involved, there's nothing they can do about that division. It will remain until the end of time, until Allah decides to clear it up or the Imam Al-Mahdi makes his return. On the other hand, many Sunnis and Shiites have very amicable relationships if they don't follow down the path of orthodoxy and just believe that they can, in a more less formidable way, but in a more informal way, develop Islam itself and the ideas of Allah without adhering to the more hardcore traditions of the various sects.
Two quick final questions. Why is it important that we, and then especially Christians, understand the distinction between Muslims, especially the sect of Shia?
Well, first of all, because of what you just mentioned in the question, how do Sunnis see Shiites? If we don't understand the importance of what Shiites believe, not just in theory, but in practice, I believe you have another guest coming on today that's going to talk about making theory into practice. If we don't understand what Shiites believe and see them for who they are and just group them into this one big idea of a Muslim presence, we show them a form of disrespect. But secondly, if we don't understand the specific doctrines that Shiites adhere to, we can't really speak to them in a way that's both conversational and compassionate without offending them.
Finally, then, with only a minute, what is the most important thing that we do need to know if we find ourselves in conversation with a Muslim and discover that this person is a Shiite Muslim?
The most important thing is to know that despite great odds, God has worked in amazing ways among Iranians, especially following the Iranian Revolution of this century. In spite of this, because of it, Iran, having the third worst record of persecution of Christians in the entire world, considering what Khomeini did in Iran in 1979 and forward, there are people coming to Christ. I say people, I mean Shiite Muslims coming to Christ in record numbers now, not only in the United States but also in other parts of the world, and especially in the Middle East. And we need to realize that there's great opportunity out there and take advantage of that.
Wayne Mayhall is associate editor of the Christian Research Journal. He's co-author of a cover story for a recent edition of the Christian Research Journal titled The Other Islam, Who Are the Shia? Wayne, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure.
When we come back from this break, here in the second half hour of the program, Pastor Daniel Skillman's going to join us. He's authored an article recently titled Changes in Doctrine and Worship, A Call to Resistance. Changes all the order of the day. And of course, everyone says, whether it be mainline denominational leaders or the bright lights of American evangelicalism like Rick Warren, we're not changing any doctrines. They all say that. No, no, no. Doctrine is sacrosanct. No doctrines are being changed. But you don't have to be a biblical scholar or a professional theologian to see that they are. They will say, well, all we're talking about is changing certain practices that are neither here nor there, worship practices, other practices within the church. And those can change, they say, without affecting what Christians believe and teach and confess. I've often said that, you know, Baptists worship the way they do because they believe as Baptists do, and Roman Catholics worship the way they do because they believe as Roman Catholics do. What happens when you find people worshiping like Baptists? Will they eventually believe like Baptists too? What's the relationship between doctrine and practice? We'll answer that question after this.
My local Christian bookstore just sells Jesus Schlock. Where can I find good material? We at NewReformationPress.com are committed to providing a hand-picked selection of books and teaching materials that educate, inform, and entertain while uniquely maintaining a relentless focus on the gospel. We believe that these forgotten doctrines and their scriptural emphases can not only enrich individual Christians and revive the church, but also address the deepest needs of our culture. Discover our growing library of resources by Dr. Rod Rosenblatt of the White Horse Inn radio program, including his powerful address, The Gospel for Those Broken by the Church, available exclusively at NewReformationPress.com, or the Big Picture audio presentation, Bible in an Hour, by Pastor Wade Butler. Learn the center and scope of redemptive history and scripture in just 1 hour. And of course, be sure not to miss our selection of t-shirts, gifts, and artwork as well. NewReformationPress.com. Finally, Reformation theology made accessible.
The sharpest arrow in your apologetics quiver. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
General Electric has come a long way since it was known for wholesomeness and toasters. This huge conglomerate announced they'll use embryonic stem cells to test the toxic effects of drug treatments. They kill human embryos and experiment on them, similar to what the Nazis did to the Jews. But they say they do it in an ethically and scientifically responsible manner. How can killing innocent human life be ethical? GE is actually hopeful these tiny humans can someday take the place of lab rats as their primary testing method. Please tell GE they should get out of the killing business. Go to lifeissues.org and click on today's broadcast link for GE's contact information. If they hear from enough of you, they might reverse themselves.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.